Hi, and welcome to the second episode of the Wardens of the Midwest podcast. I'm Mickey.
I'm Joe from Cincinnati.
I'm Mike.
Danny.
And we had such a great reception for the last episode that kind of excited about this one.
I know. It was like we were supposed to wait 2 weeks, but we were like, let's just do another one.
Yeah.
Like, this is just, it's so much fun hearing people tell me how great I am.
Aww. Fortunately, we recorded and then posted it a couple of days later. And in the couple of days it took, there is a huge slew of previews. So
it was that night that they showed Sir Gregor and everybody.
After we recorded, I got a text from my friend, and he was just like, "Hey, did you see the mountain?" I was like, "Did they release that?" And then I was like, "Ah, we're done recording."
Yeah, well, I mean, speaking of that, we're going to be seeing him this week. King's Peace is releasing this week.
Yeah, supposed to release tomorrow, right?
Yeah, I'm excited.
Oh. We're recording on Wednesday, so it'll be released by the time this airs.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, we'll get this up tonight, so it shouldn't be a problem. Yeah, I think there's some great cards in there. I mean, the spoil for Clegane was just incredible. I mean, being stronger than the Viper, I think that's really thematically awesome.
I think that people tend to overreact to spoilers. I think that Gregor is really, really good, but I don't think he's going to define anything.
He's definitely a one-of.
He's a roulette card that ruin games, but then can do nothing in games.
Yeah, you throw a one-of in there, you've got bodyguards to protect him, you know. Yeah. He's not going to replace Tywin.
Can he have a bodyguard?
He's a lord.
Yeah,
he's a lord.
He's House Clegane, knight, and a lord.
Which makes no sense.
Yeah, and he's not loyal.
Yeah, they're not loyal. Yeah.
So you can get a 10 strength military guy for 5 gold.
Yeah, that pillages and destroys everything.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty cool. But I mean, easily the card that I'm most excited about is Lords of the Crossing.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about Lords of the Crossing.
Or Lord of the Crossing, sorry. Yeah, I think it's going to, for the month that it's going to be relevant, you know, with First Snow Winter coming out.
Yeah. After First Snow comes out, it's going to become less impactful.
I was about to say, like, what deck do you play Lords of the Crossing in?
I mean, Martell, or control decks in general, Brad.
Targ, maybe?
Yeah.
Targ can field all those characters.
And, I mean, and with Drogo out there, you've got 2 military challenges. So that's 4 challenges in a round.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can...
Yeah, the way I was thinking about it, you need to do 3 challenges, unless you have a way of doing the same challenge twice.
Yeah.
It's not a terribly feasible plot.
Well, yeah. I think it's going to be good.
Or agenda.
I think it's going to be good for factions that have very even spreads of icons, like Lannister, Tyrell, Martell. Those 3 have really, really good spreads. Baratheon and Stark, I hear some people like it in those 2, mm-hmm. just because the idea of getting a power or a military challenge and getting an additional power off of that
really
gets people excited. But, I mean, like, when you're playing Stark...
How often are you going to do an intrigue challenge?
Yeah, where's your intrigue challenge?
If I have 1 confinement, or 1 Melisandre, or 1 filthy accusation, I can kneel Sansa, and then that just sinks your entire agenda. So,
oh, yeah.
For that turn, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, and I think I agree with Mike on this one. I think out of Targ, it's going to be really strong out of Lannister because of the additional intrigue challenge.
Yeah, Lannister and Targ are the 2 I thought it was most viable out of. Yeah.
But then Targ, you're giving up fealty, and then you lose half your scare factor during challenges.
Oh, trust me. I understand why the agenda wouldn't be good out of Targ. I'm not sure how good it would be in general. Because, say you're going first, you have to initiate 3 challenges at least.
Yeah.
The first one, you're probably just going to give up and lose, right? Just do 1 guy, he gets -1 strength. It's not like you're winning that challenge anyways.
Yeah.
Second one, it's whatever one you don't care about after that. And maybe you win it, probably do. How much do you commit to that? Do you just throw 1 guy in? Do you throw 2 or 3 guys in? Then your last challenge, you go for the wad, get that power.
Yeah.
Afterwards, what are you left with? No defenders? 1 defender?
Yeah,
2 defenders?
And that's the thing, because that first challenge with the -1 strength is really going to dictate, like, you know, the course of your
game.
And
it's even worse going second, because you've defended against all of your opponent's challenges. You have 3 guys still up. If you have 2, it means you're making 1 challenge at -1 and another challenge regular.
Yeah.
So it's actually a disadvantage.
But, I mean, the pro is really nice, too, because you get a power for a challenge that wouldn't normally give you a power. Your second challenge could be a power challenge. You win that, get a power. And your third challenge could be, like, a military or an intrigue. You get an additional power there. It could really accelerate, especially with, like, Lady Sons of Rose and all these other Boneway and things like that, that are, they're creating alternative ways of gaining power. You could really rock it out of some factions.
I can see that, but I just see, I look at the way the games I've played, I think it's not even above, it might be like a little above 60% the number of turns I actually initiate three challenges.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah. I mean,
unless you're playing against Night's Watch, in which you do it every single...
Yeah. The only time I ever initiate three challenges against opponent is if I'm going second, I just have three guys standing, I say, whatever, sure. Three challenges. The other thing is, if I was going first, the only time I'd do it is if I had like no fear of retaliation from my opponent at all. Like I bowed out their whole board or something like that.
Which is likely with Baratheon, but I mean, but then you can also do it if you have stand. Like for instance, if you had Robert with Lightbringer, he can do a military challenge, stand, he can do a power challenge, and then you can do an intrigue challenge with Melisandre. That's three challenges, two characters. That's pretty reasonable.
Yeah, I mean, there's also the power grab with the Red Viper. I mean, his strength pump at the end. Like, it can be worth it just to do the chump challenges, like, here and there, and then get the Red Viper through for, you know, that extra power or two.
Yeah.
I don't care for the card, to be perfectly honest. It seems like a win more agenda to me.
Yeah.
And I don't like win more cards. I prefer just straight control or aggro. I don't like the idea that, you know... You can win the game faster if you're already winning the game.
Sure. Well,
I don't think you can just plug it into an existing deck, right? I mean, you have to build around it, basically. You have to build your icon spread so that you can do it easily. And you have to put in events like Support of the People and Put to the Sword and things that capitalize on plus five, because that's what you're going to be banking on.
Lots of
in
stealth.
That third challenge.
Lots of stealth. I mean, a third challenge with Balin. You know, who's going to be able to defend against that?
Yeah.
And so, you know, you do your chumps, or you have your first challenges be based around stealth.
But Greyjoy has the same problem with intrigue.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. But I mean, not for much longer. We got the reader's out now.
I'll be interested to see what they do with agendas going forward. The problem I have right now is this is the only one really that has a huge disadvantage. The other had deck building restrictions, sort of. Like banners, you have to include 12 cards.
Sure.
Ability you had can't have more than 15 cards, but this is the first one like in game I'm taking a disadvantage on my turn to sure. Hopefully get an advantage somewhere else.
And you know, it's to push those, you know, five strength or more events and locations at that point, and then, or just to make sure you have it, or to, you know, power grab things like that.
And for that reason, I think Tyrell is going to be a natural fit for Lords of the Crossing, just because they're already trying to do plus five anyway.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I get what you guys are saying, like. You know, it's going to be difficult to do three challenges, and it's going to be taxing on your personality base. But
I think Tyrell could do it, actually, now that I think about it.
Yeah, I think Tyrell could do it pretty easily. They've got the informant, too, right?
So. And it helps with the Mander. You know, I mean, you're going to consistently get the Mander off every turn.
Now Randall can attack and then automatically stand in the third challenge.
Exactly.
Things like that. So there are ways to mitigate the problems. But once First Snow of Winter comes out, like you said, it's going to be a problem because... You know, in order to get three challenges off reliably, you're going to have a lot of 1, 2, 3 cost guys that,
exactly.
I'm just going to lose this challenge with a bastard daughter.
Yeah. And it's also, you know, you just don't want with your board wiped like that, you don't want to leave yourself defenseless.
Yeah.
And that's really what it boils down to. And I think going back to what Mike was saying about it's a win more card, I definitely agree with that. And then, you know, I guess it's a good segue into the next card that's, I think, is going to make a big impact coming out, the Crone of Vase Dothrak. Shall we have a moment of silence for all the poor dead characters that are going to occur as a result of this?
You know,
I mean, 2 cost, mono icon, 2 strength, and I mean, it's basically a heads on spike reaction without, you know, the power.
Yeah,
and that's ridiculous.
Well, go ahead and read the text box on that, just for people that haven't seen it yet.
Sure. Crone of Vase Dothrak, 2 cost, intrigue icon, 2 strength. It's a Dothraki, not loyal. Reaction: after a character is discarded from an opponent's hand or deck, kneel a Dothraki character to place that card in its owner's dead pile.
So
self-kneel, you know? Boop.
Yeah, and then you also have the Braid of Warriors who are Dothraki, and if you're crazy, you can put Ricaro in the deck, too.
Yeah, that's true.
But, you know, I was thinking
out of Lannister. that's because, you know, last week we were talking about what does a banner to Targaryen bring? Well, Braided Warriors, Crone of Vase Dothrak.
Well, I had Alex Kern, a guy from, he works with the White Book.
Yeah.
He sent me a message through somebody else. He said, like, it's all about the Handmaidens. And that was something that, you know, we didn't really talk about the Handmaidens. And he's right. Like, Cersei, if you had Cersei out, you can do an intrigue, and then if you had Castle Rock, she could stand and do another intrigue that's four cards.
Yeah.
If you had Wardens of the West, that's six cards.
Sure, sure.
Maybe eight cards if you had four extra gold. So, I mean, and then you have Asha, you have Marjorie.
Yeah, and it's an intrigue and power icon.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just, he made a good point. I was like, we didn't really talk about the Handmaidens because it's a low cost. It's like kind of an afterthought in a lot of ways. So I didn't really even think about it when we were talking about Banner of the Dragon. But you made a very good point, and I stand corrected.
Yeah, I mean, with Crone of Vase Dothrak coming out right now, I think it's going to be absolutely ridiculous. In my opinion, Intrigue is, you know, far and away the best challenge type that's out there right now. Not only are you hitting your opponent's deck, you have events like Tears of Lease that, you know, can do character kill. And there's so many ways for icon removal right now that it's just not even an issue. It's a cheap kill effect off of something that's very simple to do. Hand control without a lot of draw in the game. I mean, Intrigue is just so powerful that introducing a card like Crone of Vase Dothrak, I mean, the moment that you see Targ or a banner to Targ, I mean, now you got to worry about characters in hand. And then with, you know, all these resets that with First Snow of Winter coming out, with, you know, Varys, you know, pretty much coming back into competitive play. Now, you can't keep them in your hand. You can't keep them on the board. Where do you put your characters?
You can't keep them on the top of your deck because of the reader.
Yeah,
so.
That's true. that is
you
true.
You keep them safe in your discard pile.
Fair and the Maiden Fair to the Tickler.
See,
that hasn't worked for me. I've tried so many times and it hasn't worked.
It's so crazily Shaga. It's like not even functional. But it feels so awesome when you do it. I remember I built a deck around that just to play one game. And I did it and it felt great.
Yeah, I mean, I really think that we've got some really impactful cards. Like, I hear a lot of people calling this next chapter pack, you know, the Knights and Ladies pack. And
yeah.
I agree with that. I mean, obviously, there's a lot in here that is about that theme. But, I mean, we've got some really, I mean, we have Newly Made Lord.
Yeah.
And fine. What I'm happy about is that you can cancel it with Treachery. And that's really important.
And you can save it too. So if you just have, like, you know, a lot of people save their location dupes just for claim soak, or not, no, sorry, intrigue claim soak. Like, just have extra cards in hand in case they do an intrigue. It doesn't hit an important card, but now you can just drop that dupe on there and then they can't get to it. Same with Political Catastrophe from last pack, or whatever it's called.
Yep.
Political Disaster, Catastrophe, something like that. So, you know, you have ways of mitigating something like that. So someone posted a thread on Card Game DB, like, is this OP overpowered?
Wait, is what overpowered?
Newly Made Lord. Yeah. And like, no, he's a 4/4, one icon, and, you know, he's only worth anything if there's a good location that's not duped on the board.
I like that he's not loyal, you know, because there's just some decks out there, like, you know, Baratheon gets Iron Throne, Chamber of the Painted Table out, and, you know, that's just...
You kind
of
want to get rid of that.
It puts a timer on a game the moment that comes out. Now you're like, oh, okay, here, Newly Made Lord. You know, whether you're playing Greyjoy or you're bannering to get stealth. And then...
Love that timer.
Yeah.
Why am I not surprised?
As long as
like
I'm not
time?
Playing against Greyjoy, it's like the best timer in the game.
Oh, I think it's appropriate that he's not loyal, though. I remember in 1.0, people would run him out of house and pay 5 gold for him.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be a lot more tricky.
I mean, that was an outrageous cost in 1.0, but people would do it.
So I'm not 100% familiar with the source of this card. I'm assuming this is based Victarion taking over the Shield Islands. Is that what this is?
Oh, the theme of the card?
Yeah. Like,
I think
who is the Newly Made Lord?
I think it's just...
Well, he was originally a Bandit Lord, and he was a neutral card, if I'm not mistaken, back in 1.0.
No, he was a Lord in 1.0.
I thought he was a Greyjoy in 1.0 as well.
I'm sorry. Back in the CCG, he was a neutral card.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. He was the Bandit.
I don't think Newly Made Lord refers to anything specific in the fiction, Joe.
Yeah, well, I looked it up, and I just couldn't find anything except for when Victarion took over the Shield Islands and named four lords for the four islands.
The picture kind of speaks for itself. He's a newly named lord because he stabbed the old lord in the chest with a spear and took over his castle.
Is that what he's doing?
Yeah.
Yeah. No,
I was like, why does that guy have a...
Wait, he's like right in the moment where he's about to... you know, enter into the new lord or the old lord.
Okay.
But one thing, one thing that's the biggest difference between this card and what we had in 1.0 is 1.0 was a passive effect. And that's just, it was ridiculous.
What do you mean a passive effect?
It could not be canceled.
Yep.
It was not a reaction.
Really?
Yeah, it would just come out and it would happen.
That's silly.
It was silly. It was absolutely silly.
But to the point of like putting it in all kinds of decks, now you actually have to banner to use them. So.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And then, you know, I mean, we get good cards like that that are coming in. And then, now, I may be alone on this one, the Bone Way. I don't get it.
You don't get it?
I mean, I get it. Yeah, you get the... So for anyone who wants to know what the Bone Way is, it's a two-cost unique Martell location, loyal. It's a Dorn reaction. After you lose a challenge, place one Vengeance token on the Bone Way. Dominance action. Kneel the Bone Way and discard six Vengeance tokens from it to gain three power for your faction. Now, sounds good on paper.
Okay.
But why? There's just so many other locations. I mean, I don't want to... Location heavy Martell deck. I've already got Cast in Gray.
Yeah.
Sunspear, one of, you know, why not? Because it's there.
Mm.
And, you know, I've got my, I need my economy. So I've got my Blood Orange Groves. I've got my Rose Roads, my King's Roads. I just, how do you make room for something like that? Is it just something you just throw a one of in there?
Yeah, you put one copy in, maybe one or two support of the peoples. If you have a couple other one ofs that you use for locations.
No, yeah. But why bother in that case?
I mean, don't know.
A one of, you want to draw into it, you know, in round one or two for it to be effective?
Because you have to lose six challenges.
Well,
like, and I mean, the beauty of it is it's like it's not just as the defender. It's just lose six
challenges. I am not
challenges.
Advocating that you put this in a deck. I'm just saying, if you are going to, that's what you would do.
I think you can put it in a deck. I could see it going into a Martell Banner of the Watch. I could see it going into Martell Lord of the Crossing.
I could see it in a deck. I just don't know if it would be a good deck. I mean, Martell loves their little
stall
like
game.
Yeah, stall. I mean, you put this out
Doran's
like,
game
first or second turn while you're stalling to get your Reviper and Doran's game in hand.
Sure.
And sure enough, you've lost six challenges by the sixth round. And then the Viper comes in, he attacks, stealths through someone with some help from Sirio. You take like five power from that. Then you play Doran's game, you take five more power from that. You take three power off of this, and then you're like, oh, I had two power to begin with. I win the game.
Use is not just the power gain, too. I mean, you have... This is another stall technique where you put it onto the board and they're like, let's see. If I do a military challenge and I lose, he loses a dupe of this person and doesn't actually affect his board, or he kills a reducer, and then he gets another token.
Yeah, adding considerations.
I may as well just not even do this.
I also like it because it's like you can use it as a mind game, like military challenge of one.
I'll let it throw.
Exactly.
And you know, one thing, and I guess one thing I didn't really consider is that the three powers swing on a single turn. I mean, if Lady Sansa's Rose hasn't taught us anything at this point, is a big deal.
It's a dominance action, though, so you have to live through the whole turn.
That's true. That is true. But I mean, at the same time, you know, either that's the turn you win.
Yeah, it's not like Sansa, like, I think I can let this challenge go through and still win. And it's like renown,
sure.
Claim, unopposed,
yeah.
Sansa's Rose, like, shit. I just lost because I let him gain seven power in one action.
And you know, we talked about Lady Sansa Rose a little bit in the Knight's deck, but do you think this chapter pack gave the Knight Lady deck everything it needs to succeed?
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Like, I mean, okay, so... And it's even giving the other houses more knights.
Knighted is amazing.
Yeah, knighted is amazing. And then for Stark, Sir Roderick Castle.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a knight. A good ability as well. I mean...
A drackable knight.
You have Sir Alistair Thorne, who's also a knight, which is quite useful.
Except the Knight's Watch doesn't have any
ladies. Yeah, Knight's Watch.
So how is
no knights and
amazing,
no ladies.
Yeah, you banner to Stark for ladies.
Because knighted actually leads to a win strategy.
I mean, at a Night Watch?
Well, Night's Watch, it's... For those who don't know, the Practice Blade is a one-cost, Night's Watch character-only attachment. It's not loyal. Ambush of two, attached character gets plus one strength and gains a military icon. But the problem is, you know, looking at the Night's Watch characters, a lot of them have military icons, and that's actually their strongest icon for the most part. If it were like an intrigue icon, I can get behind that.
Joe, swords don't give intrigue icons.
That's not the point. I'm saying that it's going to be relatively low impact. You know, it's plus one strength, so you can eke out a challenge maybe if it's like, oh, I'm going to attack for four strength, and they defend with a four strength. You're like, haha, I pay two gold to win a challenge where I attacked with one guy.
It's like a bad widow's whale.
It's
a really bad widow's whale. Yeah.
Well, then, just on the point of knighted, you're talking like such an amazing card. I can see how it's good in a deck that would run Sansa's Rose, but otherwise, what does it do?
Those decks are going to be everywhere.
I really like the plus one strength, though, to get out of like burn range
exactly.
as well.
That's why I was saying the Practice Sword seems just as fine. Even
well,
better.
The Practice Sword is only Night's Watch.
Yeah, it's a Night's Watch.
I mean,
Watch
for
care.
You, Joe, who do you care about?
Who do you love, Joe?
Who do you
love?
Night's Watch.
Yeah. Okay. I was just wanting to double check.
And that's why he's so disappointed with these cards.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think Alistair Thorne's a great Night's Watch card.
I think he's serviceable.
And he's a ranger on top of that. So
I'd add one of them into the deck, in any given deck. You know, maybe one. Perhaps two, but six gold. I mean, saving four gold for challenges phases is difficult.
It's just like you just don't play. You mean you just, you know, you have the gold. You just don't play him in marshalling.
Yeah, but it's basically you'd have to be acting, right? You're like, you have to look at your hand like, I have nothing in my hand. I'll sit on four. This is so stupid.
Trading with Pentoshi turn, you know?
Yeah. But if it's predictable, then it's predictable. And it's like, especially with the Maester Aemon, it's like, I'll not do a military because I don't have a reason to.
Yeah, exactly.
So it kind of works against itself in some ways. So I like it. I think it's a good card. I think it could surprise some people, and it makes ravens attack people, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't think it's not, oh my god, amazing. It's just like, another card that I can play in Night's Watch.
While we're talking about knights, though, I just want to point out the card Mare in Heat.
Oh, yeah.
Why was it called that? I mean, they could have said, like, elitely trained warhorse or something.
No, Mare in Heat
is thematic.
Yeah, it's a reference to the jousting contest between Clegane and the Knight of Flowers when the Knight of Flowers Mare was in heat, and that's what caused Clegane's
stallion.
Stallion.
Okay,
to,
I get it.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
And then he chopped
the stallion's
head
off. I was
like,
what makes this horse's ability, like, just because this is horse is like DTF, yeah. It's like super awesome.
They're just really into horses.
This horse is...
That's okay. We don't judge. Not on this podcast.
No. So, yeah, I mean, with Marin Heat and then Hobber, who just gets a lady, so it's like, I'll just play this guy and then get Marjorie. And then knighted, as we already said.
I mean, problem with Hobber, yeah, he's a 5 bicon, 4 strength. But I mean, is his reaction really that worth it?
I think so.
Yeah, I think so too. I just really wanted to see if anyone else disagreed with that. No, I think he's pretty good.
So you're an instigator.
It depends on how many ladies you have. I mean, he's kind of useless if you're running.
You only need one.
But what if you have already got her in play, though?
I mean, now you have a dupe of her.
Now you have a dupe of match.
For 5 gold?
Yeah.
It's not like he's also a 4 strength bicon.
Yeah, exactly.
He's a knight too. So, I mean, like, you can play him and then already have the pieces you need for Lady Sansa.
And he's House Red Wine. So,
yeah, that little chud can pump him up.
Yeah, so he can get pumped too.
Yeah,
Arbor
Knight can pump him.
Yeah, exactly.
Get him out of Dracarys range.
Yeah, I mean, that's great. So I think he's just a really strong character.
You're never out of Dracarys range.
And talking about impactful cards, I think it's time we move on to Moon Boy.
Oh, yeah. I agree.
I think that he's probably the best card in this pack.
I mean, the artwork alone, I'm getting him tattooed over my face.
Dude, he's loyal. I have another Baratheon I can target with fealty now.
Oh, yeah.
That's a 1-cost, 2-strength power icon.
I do like the insight, honestly.
Yeah, I don't think he's that bad, really. I mean, if you've got the whole Baratheon control package going, you can easily put a power challenge through using him.
Just having a 1-of, he's only 2-costs, so he works with the curve. And you just get him out there, you throw him into a challenge with Rob, and like he's going to lose. So you get that power, you get that challenge through. Also, you know, throw some other icons on him. Yeah. You know, give him Little Bird, give him Sirio's training, something like, I don't know why. But
yeah.
Sirio's like, I'm going to train this jester.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the card's a little strange, but I like the insight, because on top, right now, as amazing as Red Keep is, it's expensive, and you know, you can't lose a power challenge in any way, shape, or form.
Cool.
This one's more consistent. You know, it's just a card every turn. I like it. They've been missing an insight card, so this could be a nice way to tie it in without making it too overpowered. Hence why he's mono icon.
Yeah, I mean, he's not a bad card, but I just think it's funny that he loses you cards if you mess up.
I mean, let's talk about worthless. Now, I never bet against my family.
Yeah, that is pretty worthless.
Now, so I've heard arguments going both ways. I've heard some people like, oh, I would, are you familiar with it? If anyone's not familiar with it, I'd never bet against my family. It's a Lannister event, 0-cost, loyal. Challenges action. Kneel your faction card to reveal the bottom 5 cards of your deck. You may put 1 unique Lannister character revealed by this effect into play. Return the other cards to the bottom of your deck in any order. At the end of the phase, if that card is still in play, discard it from play. Cannot be saved.
Oh, yeah, that thing.
So now, I actually was against it until something occurred to me. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Now, let's say I have Tywin in play. I never bet against my family. I pull a Tywin out, put him into play as a dupe, right? Now, you can't, he's not in play as a character. He's a dupe.
But it says card. Okay. I think you still have to discard the dupe because it's a card.
Yeah, but then use it as claim soak, you know? Just discard the dupe because the card is no longer in play. Woo. Who cares?
I don't know if that's how it works. Because, the card is in play.
Yeah, but then...
I feel like you have... If Tywin is in play and you pulled Tywin, you have to discard Tywin and he cannot be saved.
No, but card...
into play, it becomes a blank card that just says save the character.
Referencing if that card is in play.
Yeah.
So if that card is discarded as a dupe, who cares?
I'd be interested in a ruling
on that. I think that's probably how it works, but sometimes these rules are not intuitive.
I don't see how it fits into a deck. What are you going to take out to put that in a Lannister deck?
Treachery. In a second.
Oh, yes, that card sucks. Yeah, everyone knows that. Yeah. But
worst card in the game.
And you can take out three treacheries, put in three of these. Your deck's golden.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Or just play with six of them and take out Hand's Judgment, too.
That's true.
Yeah, those aren't needed.
You can take out Tywin, too, if you want to. Pretty garbage, honestly.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. And then, run three Lannisport Moneylenders instead.
Yeah. It's the same thing, right?
Yeah, it's about the same thing.
It's super cheap, too.
Oh, yeah, completely.
It's like a third the cost, and you get half the gold.
Exactly.
Jesus.
It's Tywin on a budget.
We're being sarcastic for those who don't know. So, anyway.
Yeah, we've got it. There's cards like the King's Peace and things like that, and, we'll gloss over those for right now. Tourney for the King, yeah, of course, it's going to be good.
What do you think about the King's Peace? I think the stats are pretty terrible, but the effect isn't that bad. You can use it twice.
It's not bad. It's 4-0-1 5 reserve.
The stats aren't very good, but
yeah, but what
stats
are you gonna,
are off.
What are you gonna take out for
it's
it,
the same
really?
Thing as like summoning or
yeah I mean they already have the cancel a military challenge card event. How much denial do they really need? They have so much Neil.
Exactly.
I don't think it's necessary.
It's one power, though. You can slowly creep to victory. Isn't that the...
Yeah, I'll definitely throw it in my Barrow Tyrell or my Barrow Fealty.
Night's Watch might actually like it, to be honest.
It's loyal.
Oh, boo. Okay, never mind. This plot sucks.
All the faction
plots are going to be loyal.
Yeah.
I didn't even notice it was a faction plot. I suppose if you had Barrow bannered at the wall, it could serve some purpose.
Yeah, but I still don't even think it's really that necessary.
Yeah, I guess since we touched on Barra as well, let's give Stark some love here. Wolf Dreams and Roderick Castle. So I like Wolf Dreams. I'm glad they brought it back. I think that's going to be very useful to, kind of tie in Dire Wolf when it becomes a thing. Like, is anyone actually using Kennelmaster right now?
I saw some decks use it, yeah.
Really?
I saw, like, I don't know. Some guy won some tournament and they posted his deck. I looked at it and I downloaded it. I didn't really try it or anything like that, but it won something.
Yeah.
So can't be terrible. He was just in a tournament with a bunch of terrible people.
Oh, but that's not nice. We shouldn't make qualitative judgments about their playing. We don't.
Yeah, bad card draw could account for that.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I'm not judging him for that deck. I have no idea what was in it.
Hashtag
no, I mean, it
variant
was,
sucks.
I looked at it. I was like, this could work. It probably wouldn't beat every deck, every top deck in the meta, but I think it could surprise people.
Yeah, in our meta, we don't see a lot. We have maybe a couple Stark players.
Yeah.
I guess we need to start paying more attention to Stark, especially with Mr. Roderick Castle coming out.
Yeah, and they're getting better. Even in a tournament setting, the Castle Annals or whatever they're called.
Annals of Castle Black.
Annals of Castle Black. Yeah. Annals.
There's a direwolf worth getting at this point. Like, I always thought the Wolf Dreams in 1.0 was pretty useless because all the direwolves were pretty useless.
Oh, dude, well, yeah. I mean, my
well, dire- most of them were, but, I mean, Greywind.
Or, even the pups at this point, with enough direwolves out there.
You can get Summer and reclaim Arya,
exactly.
Sansa,
or
Bran.
Exactly.
So it has uses.
And it's zero cost, It pays for itself. I'll trade this card for another card.
What I was saying last week. It's just a card that you still have to draw it, but then when you draw it, it's like a duplicate copy of another card
that
you might want.
Yeah, that adds a little more utility. We were talking about tutoring.
Yeah.
And that's one way to combat variance. That's, I think that's a great way for Stark to, kind of get out what it needs as quickly as possible, speed it up a little bit.
Exactly.
It's one of those cards that I would consider bumping, you know, up to 62 and tossing two copies in a deck.
Yeah, why not? I mean, I run 62 just, yeah, I you do know.
Will not break my cardinal rule.
Run 60 cards, yeah. No, you're more, no 60? Less.
It's a minimum.
Yeah.
A minimum?
Talking about combat,
or is it
combating,
a maximum?
Well, minimum,
it's a minimum
requirement,
and a maximum.
Of me, a minimum requirement of a deck. About combating variants.
Yeah, that's true. So what do you guys think of fishing net?
I think I liked the old fishing net better.
I mean, I think...
I don't remember. What was the old fishing net? Remind me.
Two cost... weapon item. I don't remember how many traits it had on it, but a whole bunch. And attached character didn't count their strength for dominance and couldn't be declared as an attacker or a defender.
Oh yeah, that's right. Well, I think in this format that would be a little bit too much.
I think it's fine.
It's a good card.
It feeds
into the Greyjoy.
Yeah.
I mean, if there's a character you're always stealthing anyways, like Tyrion, Robert, why not put net on him?
I can't stealth Tyrion.
Yeah, he has stealth.
Tywin is what I meant.
Sure.
And to your point, you can put this on Tyrion, and then he won't defend anyway.
Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that.
It's like an upgraded version of stealth that you can attach to somebody.
But then the problem is that you can't see Stone Chair them.
Yeah, that's true.
Because, you know, they have an attachment at this point.
Yeah.
And they're also, when they attack, or no, I guess attacking doesn't really matter.
So they already have two dupes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, just that's one way to make sure that, you know, they can't interact at all in this one.
Oh, I think it's a good card. You know, it's funny, I was not intending to go over the entire chapter pack because so many other podcasts are already doing it, but we kind of did.
Yeah, no, I think we're all really excited about it. And,
yeah.
You know, we left the plot out, so I think that's okay.
Let's talk about the plot.
We also barely talked about the mountain.
Well, the mountain.
I mean, the mountain's pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah.
You know, he's going to be. I mean,
people know the mountain.
Yeah.
People saw the mountain. They talked about it for days when it first was released last week. So.
And, you know, I mean, now I guess now that we have this chapter pack, we've got a lot of strengthening of pre-existing traits, keywords, things along those lines. And then what we've got coming up, and this is something that, you know, has been getting a lot of discussion, especially on the Facebook page, on Card Game DB, resets.
Yeah, with Valor being, Nate French said that they're reprinting Valor Margolis, so then everyone just went insane.
Yeah, and I think we should leave Valor alone because we don't know how they're going to do it. It doesn't matter. Like,
and
right
I think
now.
People are sick of hearing about it anyway.
I agree. But I mean, first,
I just assumed Varius was the reprint of Valor.
Yeah, no. I think they want to print Valor in a pack so it can get cycled out.
Yeah.
You know, and then they can print it again in another way if they need to. But I mean, I guess the next major reset
cycled
that we're going to see.
Do you realize how long FFG
cycles
are right now? What?
Years.
Yeah, it's like 5 or 6 years in
a
cycle.
But I mean, at least it can get, you know, cycled out at some point.
Sure.
I mean, you know, I'll still be playing.
People talk about this game like they're going to be playing it for the rest of their life.
I mean, we played 1.0 for a really long time.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's too far off the mark.
Yeah.
I mean, but the big one that's coming out, First Snow of Winter. Right now, you know, board flop, aggro, and low curve. You know, wins games, essentially.
Yeah.
Getting your chuds out there to protect your big guys, having blockers, you know, whatever you need. And especially if they have some sort of utility to them, are really powerful. With the introduction of reserve value, like in 1.0, First Snow of Winter was bad enough, but at least you could just have a hand size of whatever you wanted, essentially.
Yeah.
Now with reserve value, these characters get bounced back to your hand. Not only is your entire gold curve thrown off, but conceivably, I mean, depending on which plot you play, you're going to have to discard a bunch of these characters as well.
Yeah.
And I actually find it in some ways even more devastating than Valor. Because with Valor, it's on the board, you deal with it, you bounce back from it, you have a hand, you play characters out there. The other person, you know, won't be able to do much. But with First Snow of Winter, there's claim in that round. There's other things to deal with. I mean, the person who's playing First Snow of Winter will generally have a superior board state.
Was there no claim on Valor in 1.0?
No, it was a 2-0-0. But we don't know what they're going to make it this time. I mean, I'm assuming it's going to be similar. But I think that First Snow of Winter is a lot more dangerous now than it ever has been because of reserve value.
Well, I voiced my displeasure about First Snow Winter last week, you know, because the wall is already difficult enough to defend without all my chumps being thrown back into my hand. But I am excited about it in some ways. Like, you know, It is going to make some cards very fun to play. Like Yoren at Night's Watch.
Yeah.
He can steal somebody and then, you know, like, you know, you can steal the Hound, maybe.
Yeah, I mean,
and then use him, and then he has to go back to their hand, but then you can, then he has to play it, and then if you do First Snow Winter, you can get Yorn back and then pick something else out of their discard pile. Sure. So.
Yeah, I think that's what people that are going to be able to take the most advantage of it is people with low-cost things that just have reactions as they come into play.
Yeah, because I mean, right now there's two popular Night's Watch decks, Night's Watch, Banner to the Lion, and Banner to the Kraken.
Yep.
And both of them, I mean, utilize, I mean, I guess more Banner to the Kraken utilizes the double march. And then, you know, you have Yorin out. You use March to discard and play a next copy of Yorin, steal someone else kind of thing.
Yep.
And, I mean, now with the First Snow of Winter, you know, you can repeat that effect, and I think that's pretty powerful in a lot of ways. So, I mean, I don't see Night's Watch really having that many issues with it. Yeah, a lot of your chuds are going to go the way of your hand, but, I mean, you don't have much card draw, so it may not be a bad thing to get them back into your hand.
Oh, I think Lannister's going to love it.
Yeah.
With the ambush they've got and the ability to produce all that gold off the intrigue challenges the damage they can do to their opponent's hand via Cersei, via Wardens.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
Lannister's going to have a field day with that plot.
And then, I mean, Martell, I mean, I would love to get my Green Blood Trader back.
Yes.
That sounds fantastic.
Any card that has a when enters play effect is going to really enjoy
it. And that's what you're going to stack, essentially, those low cost when it enters play effects. You know, get them back and then play him again. And
might almost be worth putting that knight back in my Baratheon deck.
Yeah.
Yeah, and remove more power.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would play the plot, but if someone plays it against me.
Yeah.
And it's a knight, so nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, so, you know, there's a couple factions that will want to play it. Other factions will want to stay away from it. I think that Targaryen would want to stay away from it, just because they don't want to be returning their dragons right before Daenerys is attacking.
Yeah, the whole point is that their gold curve is so low that they can flop the board and
can't
maintain board presence. Once you lose that, you know, I mean, can't really recover from that.
I mean, they won't be terribly upset to see Jorah head back to their hand once he's got, you know, a couple of tokens on him, but they're not going to run the plot.
Yeah. And Viserys, but I mean,
well, actually, no, I think they would. I mean, there's other reasons for them to run the plot, because then what you're doing is you're taking care of everyone but their big characters, which forces those characters to either attack or, you know, do nothing for a turn, and then that can, you know, get you your traps for Dracarys and things like that. And so that could be very useful. Also, if you have Khal Drogo out, multiple military challenges. So, you know, you get rid of all their chuds, and then their big characters
really
are
let alone.
Yeah. So I don't see why Targ wouldn't want to play it. I think now it's turning into, I think the meta is going to be moving around using these board resets as, like, offensive plays.
Yeah.
You know, definitely. Well,
like I said, I think Targ's going to have some pros and cons with it. And depending on what deck they're running, if they're running a Drogo-centered deck, they might want to run it a lot. If they're running a Daenerys-centered deck, maybe they don't want to run it all that often. Another deck I think would really like it is Greyjoy, just because...
Greyjoy's going to love it.
They have Asha, Theon, and Baelon, who all have stealth, and they're not going to be affected by it.
And they have saves, too. You know, I mean, with
Risen from the Sea. And their Seastone Chair, it's going to be really easy to murder people once you wipe the whole board.
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but other than that, I mean, like, Tyrell. Why would Tyrell do it?
They wouldn't.
Yeah. There's that. I mean, I don't see how... I mean, yeah, Barrow with the Vanguard Lancer, but other than that, I don't really see Barrow wanting
to
do that. No, because, I mean, they want to keep, you know, their fiery followers out there.
Is Elena's Informant 3 printed cost?
Mm-hmm.
So they might want to do it for that, but I don't think that's enough incentive for them to do it.
No, not at all. Especially, it's expensive to bring out during challenges, so...
Yeah.
There's really no reason for it. But, yeah, I mean, and that's... And so, you know, along with Varys and along with Wildfire Assault, we're seeing resets starting to actually matter. I mean, in the beginning, a lot of us looked at Varys and were like, wow, that's really expensive for, you know, a board reset. Why would we ever play this? Now, I mean, you're seeing it out of Tyrell. You're seeing it out of Lannister. You're seeing it out of Night's Watch.
You're seeing it everywhere.
Yeah, you're seeing it everywhere. And that 6 gold is worth it, you know? And it's worth playing... And I mean, he's a lord. I mean, he is a lord, right?
Yes.
Yeah, he's a lord on top of it. So, of course. So the noble cause plays, you know, you get a King's Road out there. Yeah, why not toss him out there? It's not really going to, like, hurt too much. So, I don't know. With Varys becoming more and more used, I guess, in the meta, and then First Snow of Winter on top of that, I mean, control decks are finally going to, in my opinion, have a real chance again. It's not just going to be the aggro board presence decks kind of thing.
Yeah, but I think the aggro board presence decks are going to be enjoying it too, because they're going to be removing all the chud so they can
just
rip into your Randos Harley and your...
Sure.
Like I said with Greyjoy, you have Theon and Asha, and then you're just like, oh, Stealth Randall and Knight of Flowers, and they have to kill one of them.
Sure.
Yeah, so I think it's going to be a good plot. I'm annoyed because I'm a wall player. That's just my nature. I'm a defensive player by nature, and I don't think that FFG is doing enough to support defensive decks, especially out of Night's Watch. They just keep doing things to them, and they just keep fucking with them.
That's mean, thematic, though. Nobody ever does anything to support the watch.
And that's kind of the point, you know? And Mike, correct me if I'm wrong, in 1.0, wasn't First Snow of Winter 2 cost or lower?
Yes, it was.
Okay. Now, it makes sense because they're making characters more expensive and they're raising the gold curve in 2.0. But, and frankly, a First Snow of Winter that hits only 2 cost characters would be kind of worthless right now.
It would only get rid of the chud.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, hitting that sweet spot of 3, like, throws Marjorie back into someone's hand, which, you know, that's what I love. But, I mean, on top of all that, what other types of resets do you think they're going to be introducing? I mean, it seems like this is one of the first big ones. Do you think the next one is going to be Valor, or do you think we're going to see any other reset types coming in? Like, maybe character resets, or...
I think there's enough already.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't play 1.0, so I don't really know if there are any historical things that are still hanging around that they might bring back. But I think that what they have now is pretty good.
Yeah, between Wildfire, if they do Valor,
you said doo-doo.
Snow, Winter, and Varies. I think that's more than enough.
Yeah.
To pull together, if you want a wipe, that you have options. Even though so as far as I know, unless Valor is exactly it is, none of them are perfect wipes, but I think a perfect wipe is stupid.
Yeah.
Leave those in Magic.
Yeah, I agree.
Wrath of God. I hated playing with that card in Magic. So.
Yeah, because then you're not just playing around it. You expect everyone to run it, and, you know, no matter where you are. But, I mean, that's one thing that I like about it. And whether or not Valor is what we expect it to be, I think First Snow of Winter is a good start to start being able to use these offensive board resets. And then what I'm really curious about is, how are decks going to respond to this? Like, when you have an offensive, reset like this, like how would let's say I'm playing Greyjoy, how do I recover from something like that?
It's just going to be meta defining.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really? You think? Oh yeah. I mean, it will definitely define how we all build decks, but I mean, there's so much character hate from the hand, you know, like now with Clegane out there with Heads on Spikes.
Crone
on top of that. And there's hate on the board now with, you know, Varys and First Snow and everything like that. Like, there's so much hate. There's so much punishment for characters. And one thing that I'm really curious about is, what do you do with these guys? So is it really going to turn into a matter of whoever gets their big characters out there duped with an attachment as quickly as possible win the game?
Well, and I think that's a decent segue into a problem that I've heard a lot of people talking about, is that this game is too snowbally.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, a bad setup can be the end of the game if they get, like, if they get Tywin Reducer,
sure,
Rose Road, and you get nothing.
Yeah.
Like, just a very, very average, like, oh, man, I got 6 gold out of my start. It can be difficult to respond to that, and I've seen a lot of people talk about the snowball effect, and I've seen a lot of people say, like, you know, one Varus and it can just shift the entire game. I played a game a while back on Throne Runner's YouTube channel, Shamar, and I was playing my Night's Watch Stark deck, and he was playing some Greyjoy Sun deck, and I was just thrashing him. It was like 10-0, 10-1 maybe, and I had the wall out, and I was defending it with ease, but my hand wasn't that big, just because I was playing the characters to defend the wall, so I didn't have that many characters in my hand. So then he just dropped Varys on one turn. I didn't even think that someone would run Varys out of Greyjoy.
Sure.
So it just caught me by surprise. He wiped my board, and then, like, for 3 consecutive turns, he was like, no characters, no characters, no characters, and then I lost. So it
good
can
on
feel,
him.
What?
Good on him. That sounds like a neat play.
Oh, it was annoying is what it was. So, you know,
weren't ready for the reset.
Yeah, I was not ready for the reset. I overextended like crazy because, like I said, I just did not see, I didn't even predict that Varus would be run out of Greyjoy, because that's not something that Greyjoy typically runs.
Yeah. I mean, it's very apparent when someone isn't thinking about like board clear effects like that. Like, I've had Baratheon games where I have four characters on board and they all have like eight. Like
Wildfire.
Yeah, exactly.
Suddenly it's like, man, maybe I should have just saved some of those cards in my
hand. You're looking at like the cost benefit of it. Okay, well, it's like killing three or four characters, so why not pay it at this point?
So now whenever I'm playing my wall deck, I have four characters out. I'm like, that can defend the wall. I'd rather keep characters on my hand than overextend and get screwed over by Varus again. So I think I've been scarred by Shamar, and now I'm kind of dealing with the repercussions of that. So, but now First Snow of Winter is going to change that again, because now low-cost characters aren't even valuable to have on the board.
That's true.
So, I don't know. We'll see.
I mean, it's not. I don't think it's that bad. You can still play a bunch of low-cost characters, just only have like one or two out at a time. And as soon as they play the plot, it's like Storm City again.
Yep.
You're just back to your normal game.
Well, it's just like Wildfire. If someone burns their Wildfire in turn two, you're like, oh, I now have permission to just flood the board crazy.
Maybe not so much anymore, though.
With all the other board resets are out there. And so I think that's one way of combating the snowball effect that you were talking about before, is introducing more board resets of a kind.
I agree. I think resets are the perfect response to the snowball effect, because, you know, if someone has a time when out there and he has five power because he has Seal to Hand.
Yeah.
And you can't kill him. You don't have put to the sword in your deck, and you can't tears him because you're not playing Martell.
Sure.
And it's just like, oh, he's just going to get two power turn every turn until the end of time. Oh, but I can, you know, Varus, and he doesn't have a dupe. And
exactly.
I just got rid of six or seven power off the table.
Oh, yeah.
And now it's a new game.
Yeah.
So, but Lannister players always have Tywin duped, but if in some alternate universe where they don't have them duped, you can actually do that.
Yeah,
so.
And one of the strategies from 1.0, I mean, that separated new players from veteran players, was new players generally would flop as much as they could on the board.
Yeah.
And then all they would do is sit there and complain about Valor Morghulis.
it's just a learning experience.
Yes.
I know at least a dozen people who quit 1.0 because of Valor.
Really?
Because that's what they want to do. Like, oh, well, if I have these good cards, I need to put them on the table. And there's nothing wrong with that, especially when you're learning the game. I'm not trying to, make too many disparaging comments about new players in that regard. But the fact of the matter is, as the meta grew, you learn to play around it. You hold in reserve a number of cards in your hand, and you put enough down there. Sometimes you try to bait the Valor a little more, just to get it out there so you don't have to worry about it until the next cycle of plots. But now there's so much hand hate in 2.0, you can't really do that anymore.
Yeah. And what people constantly overlook with Valor is, a person will play Valor, and depending on what the stats are, like we said, we don't know what it is, but if it's adjusted and it's a 3-0-0, mm-hmm. they get 3 gold and no claim at all.
Yeah.
So they have to wipe their boards, unless they have a bunch of duped characters, they're starting from scratch just
or
like
nothing
you are.
At all.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but it's the panic button. That's what Valor was there for. I mean, you're coming out of it with no gold, no claim, nothing. But
yeah, or if someone's deck is based around a single character and they put a single out in the first turn, killing that character will completely destroy how their deck runs. Yeah, why not? There's absolutely no reason not to just murder that character while you can.
It might make people hold on to their Daenerys and Tywin until they have a dupe of them.
These are just learning experiences. You don't marshal a 7-cost character all by himself.
Exactly. Unless you're willing to lose them.
Yeah, I think, I've played several games, and I think 4 or 5 characters is really a fine number.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if your opponent starts, piling up above that, and you don't have Snows of Winter or anything like that to deal with it, then you have to pile up too. But if you do, just let them pile up and then let them eat it.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
definitely. Yeah, I mean, I think looking at the way that this is, that they're releasing everything, I like it. I like how they're making. I mean, the only useless card in my opinion that they've released so far is Brandon's Gift.
Yep.
And I mean, that's just.
I'm sorry. Is what?
Brandon's Gift, the one that keys off of builders, and there's what only. One builder in the game right now, the veteran builder.
I think some of the core set plots are pretty damn useless, but
yeah, I mean, but usable at least. Brandon's Gift isn't even usable.
So there's one card in the entire game that's not usable, and it's a Night's Watch card.
Yeah,
is that what you're saying?
I think it's pretty thematic.
You need to stop talking about thematic with Night's Watch. I'll
just
slap you.
Waiting for Night's Watch to get reducers is one of the cards in one of their packs.
Oh, yeah.
We've given you what you should have already had at the beginning.
I don't know. I think if Night's Watch had reducers, they would be too powerful.
This is what I have to deal with every single day.
Yeah, yeah. It's okay.
I just want to see some more Wildling cards. I'm going to build Wildling decks just to play against Joe.
Like, I defend the wall against you.
Do you guys think they're going to keep Wildlings as neutral?
Sure.
Well, what else could they do?
You want to make a faction out of them?
Yeah.
Make them Night's Watch.
Dear God, 10 factions?
That would be great.
What's the 9th faction?
Yeah, that's what I'm
wondering. Wait, is it only 8 right now?
Yeah, it's only 8 right now.
Yeah, House of Aaron. That'll be the 9th faction.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's great.
Yeah, because there's like 3 Aaron characters in the entire show.
We could do House Umber, you know? Great John will be their 7 cost.
Or he's just a start character.
Yeah, that's probably what's going to be.
Over complications.
Yeah, no, I mean, I would love to see Wildlings as their own faction.
I mean,
that's what you're supposed to do with agendas.
Yeah, but I mean, this is just me personally. I think it would be a lot of fun. But, I mean, right now we only have 2 Wildling characters out there. I don't think they're going to really make a big impact until maybe the next cycle or the cycle after that. Because, I mean, now then you have to focus chapter packs on releasing Wildling cards. And that takes up a lot of space, you know, no matter how you swing it. So I don't really see it being a unified faction for a really long time. Doesn't mean I can't wish for it.
Yeah,
I would be. I would like to see an agenda that goes with Wildlings, something similar to what they did in 1.0.
Yeah,
throw a bunch of neutral ones out there, and give us a decent agenda to run with them.
Sure, sure. No, it makes sense. Yeah, well, I think that's about all the time that we have for today. I think it was great. We casted from Arkham House Games today. I want to thank James, the owner, for letting us use this space. And tonight is actually our Game of Thrones night. And so from the commotion that's going on in the other room, it seems we have a lot of people coming in and playing. I'm excited.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to give Stark some love tonight.
You're going to make love to Stark tonight?
Yeah, why not? What's left of them.
Okay. That's what you want to do.
Yeah, no, I think that sounds great for
me. It's a bunch of guys and, you know, underage girls, but you can do it.
And actually, I've got a joke for Mike.
Oh, God.
Danny had a great one last week. I think I want to try my own.
Is this going to become a thing?
I think
we're
going
to tell stupid-ass jokes at the end of our podcast.
Joe, do you not think I know what I was doing?
Well, we're going to include us singing at the end of this, right?
Oh, yeah.
You still have that recorded, right?
I do. So Mike, why are Lannister's beds so big?
I'm not sure, Mickey.
Because they push 2 twins together to make a king.
Oh.
I like that one.
I know you do.
I'll let you have it this week, Mickey.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
We can get you next week, Dan.
Yeah, your turn next week.
We'll just go back and forth and see how many Game of Thrones jokes that we can do.
It's like, what's going to be the stupid joke that we tell next week? Find out.
Episode 3. Everybody, thank you so much for listening once again. Any comments or questions or any suggestions on what you'd like to hear us talk about next week, feel free to leave them in the comments thread. And we look forward to doing this again next week.
Oh, maybe the week after that.
Or maybe the week after that. Yeah, I don't think we
soon enough.
Soon enough.
I don't live by a schedule.
Ooh, yeah, that's true. You don't. All right, have a good night.
I'm rogue.